Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Joining us on the line at the present time, Dave Ray, Communications Director for the Federation for American Immigration Reform. It seems as though things are heating up at the border yet again. Big hearing this afternoon on student visas, and we'll talk about this. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hey, Noel. Good to be with you again, my friend. Hope you're having a great summer.
We're hanging in there. It's hot as Hades down here. It's a it's a balmy 98 today, so we'll see how this plays out.
We're in our 18th day in a row of over 90, so D.C. is getting to feel some of the heat as well.
Well, I think y'all have been feeling heat for other reasons as well, too. Dave, you know, I saw this story the other night, and I hadn't heard anything. I hadn't seen a lot written about what's going on at the southern border, but it looks like a lot of activity ramping up there.
Well, you know, things, if you look back a year ago, Neil, talk about last May or June of 2019, you would see that apprehensions were about 144,000 a month in May of 2019. And the combination of increasing, you know, building the border wall, increasing assets at the border, including personnel and so on, and then some of these bilateral agreements that President Trump has worked out with our neighbors to the south, those kind of all came online. And then COVID hit, and we reduced our apprehensions at the border to very, very low levels. But now we're starting to see a concerning spike again. In fact, there's been a 90% increase between April and June of this year. It's still well below what it was last year. And we're talking about in June, it was about 32,000 apprehensions. But, I mean, there are some things to be concerned about. First of all, COVID-19 is running rampant in Latin America. And so our Border Patrol agents are under kind of an additional threat, not as if being shot at and stones thrown at you and things like that isn't enough. But so there's the threat of COVID covertly coming into the country. We do know that people are trying to sneak in to get health care in U.S. hospitals, but it's certainly something we want to keep our eye on. It's not a good trend, and hopefully it will not continue. I mean, last June, the apprehensions were 104,000 compared to this past June at 32,000. So we're still well below the catastrophic levels that we saw last year, but it's a cause for concern.
Obviously, I guess Immigration or Border Patrol is having to conduct testing of these folks apprehend them coming across the border.
What is happening is because we don't have the ability to test them, they are being captured and returned back to Mexico immediately. I mean, this is under instructions by President Trump. I mean, it's clear and apparent that we don't have testing in place for all the Americans who need it. We can't be testing everybody who's coming over. So asylum applicants are awaiting their hearings, and those are supposed to start soon. But in terms of people being captured at the border, they're simply being captured and returned to Mexico.
At some point in time in the not-too-distant past, President Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador actually shut the border down to U.S. citizens coming back across, did he not?
Oh, yeah. There were There was a story that ran last week about several governors in border states demanding that to help ensure public safety and the security of the nation, that the border really needed to be closed down. Ironically, these were the governors of Mexican border states who were talking about Americans coming into Mexico. So it's interesting when our neighbors to the south make the same arguments that we do about why it's important to have control over who's coming into your country. Obviously, public safety is always an issue. And what was also interesting is that they didn't catch any flack from the ACLU for talking about wanting to regain control of their borders and you know, better manage their public safety the way that American governors get flack from the left and the ACLU types when they say things like that.
Yeah, it's the duplicity just drives me absolutely crazy, and it's why I bring it up. We're going to go to a break, Dave, if you can stay with us. We'd like to talk about the student visa controversy that's brewing. Big hearing this afternoon and deciding where that's going to go. We'll be right back after the break. Stay with us. We're with Dave Ray from Federation for American Immigration Reform. This is Newell on WWL. Dave Ray, Communications Director for the Federation of American Immigration Reform, joins us. We're going to talk about the student visa conflict that's going on right now between the Trump administration and a number of the universities. And just to put this in context, folks, the plaintiffs are about 1,124 colleges and universities that have joined together. There are approximately 400,000 international students that come into this country, and they represent, in payments to these universities, roughly $14 billion. And what is happening now is that, and Dave, this is kind of what piqued my interest. I've talked to some parents that have kids that are in major universities in major cities, and it's a lot cheaper to live on campus than it is off campus. They're up there, they're working, they have internships and things, but those campuses are not allowing them to continue with college housing.
Right.
If they're a U.S. citizen, but they are allowing international students to come in and stay in housing, and they're making that accommodation for them. So, because the numbers pale, and they feel like they can do the social distancing, they can do it safely, and everything else, so they get a preference, and the U.S. students don't. Doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, no, it doesn't make any sense, and it really questions when you look at the number of slots that foreign students take at U.S. universities, particularly our state universities. I mean, for every seat that a foreign student is sitting in, an American kid isn't getting that seat. But in terms of this whole decision about the student visa program, Newell, you know, it looks like Congress is seeking out a scandal where none exists. You know, who comes over on a student visa? If you come here on a student visa, you are not eligible to work. You are coming here to sit in a classroom. And when you're finished sitting in that classroom and getting your degree, you go home. You're not on a path to citizenship. You're not a potential American. You're a temporary visitor. COVID-19 has turned everything on its head. And under the rules of the student visa program, you cannot even take a majority of your classes online. So if universities are looking at a fall semester where all classes will be online, then those students can remain in their home countries and they can attain their visas from a distance, just as American kids will. They'll be sitting in their homes or in their apartments and attending class online. They are not being denied a pathway to citizenship because they didn't have one in the first place. And so there's really no good reason to come here and to be physically in the country unless classes resume as normal. That does not appear to be happening.
Dave, correct me if I'm wrong. There was a limit as to the number of online classes that you could take while here on a student visa. In fact, if my memory serves me correct, you were allowed to take one per semester. And from what I recall early on in this pandemic, immigration waived the rule for the purposes of the spring semester, understanding the challenges of COVID-19.
Right.
And that people were already here and it would have been unfair to impact them. So they waived the rule. And in the interim, as I recall, they passed another administrative rule that allowed up to 3 online classes per semester, which is where it is here. So, But when I hear some of these folks talking, it's like there's been no accommodation, no remediation, no anything. But that's not true.
Now they allow
3, which is either 9 hours or 12 hours a semester. Because if it has a lab component, it's going to be 12 hours a semester, which is a full-time load.
Right. Yeah, they're allowed to take up to 3 classes. They have to take 1 class physically in the U.S. To be allowed to come into the country or to remain in the country. I mean, this is all happening just because of COVID-19. We all realize that this is going to change all of our lives, that a lot of people didn't get to attend their graduation, but there's simply no good reason to have a student come here to attend classes that they're going to only do online if their entire course load is online. This isn't denying these students anything. They're still going to get their degree. They did not have permission to remain in the United States after their coursework was over, so they were going home anyways. We don't have a merit-based immigration system, so it's not like after they finished with their degree that they could say, hey, look at me, you know, I have a great bachelor's degree from Tulane, let me compete for a visa. If they don't have a distant relative here in the United States, the chances of them getting a visa is almost nil. So these folks are really not being denied anything. They're being admitted as students into the United States. They can get their degrees. Hopefully we'll have a vaccine sooner rather than later and life can return to normal. But until then, if you are not physically attending a class, then there's no need to be physically present in the United States.
What's a little irritating
will be played out.
What's a little irritating to me in reading some of the comments of some of the university leaders, not all, but some, it's almost as if they're trying to create a much better lifestyle bubble during COVID-19, this pandemic in the United States, for a foreign student as opposed to a domestic student.
Well, I mean, the way that it's set up, and this has always really irritated me, you know, if you are a resident of the state of Maryland, let's say your family's been here since the 1624, I think when the first Maryland communities were founded, your family has put money into building these state universities and keeping them up for generation after generation, after World War I, World War II, what have you. Time comes around for your kid to get into one of the state schools in Maryland that your family has supported through taxes for generations, and there's only so many slots available because the much more lucrative foreign students take such a big chunk of them. It's unfair to American kids. And like I said, you know, I don't have a lot of sympathy for reducing the allotment of foreign students coming in the first place because they are taking someone's seat. And maybe it's the seat my kid should be sitting in, but it's definitely the seat that somebody's kid should be sitting in, somebody who's here paying taxes and keeping those schools up. The reason why the universities want to do this and are prioritizing them is because they get a lot more money for foreign students versus in-state students. But is it morally right for these schools to do? I would argue no. I would argue our own people whose families have built these universities and pay the salaries, their kids should have first dibs on these slots, not people with no connection to the United States who are only going to return to their home countries when they're done anyways.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out in today's hearing. Obviously, there's a lot at stake for the universities financially because they have grown very accustomed to receiving large sums of money in out-of-state tuition, out-of-country tuition, quite frankly, many of which pay in cash. And, they've become lazy, actually, as a result.
A third of our student visas are consumed by Chinese students many of who are having their tuitions paid by the government of China, who is arguably an enemy of the United States and does not have our best interests at heart. And those students, many of them are going home and taking the technology and the know-how that they've learned in American schools and pirating it back into China. So there's lots of good arguments as to why we shouldn't have such a robust foreign student program. But the question for the university is, yes, we know this is a cash cow and you make maybe double the income you do from a foreign student over an American student. But what's the morally right thing for you to do? Shouldn't you be giving preference to the American kid whose families have supported these schools for generations after generation? This is what the state schools are for, to allow, you know, to have a place of a college where in-state American kids and the kids of recent immigrants who live in-state can attend these schools at a reduced rate. And it's a shame that the universities are so obsessed by chasing the almighty dollar that they forget their moral obligation to educate our own people.
$14 billion, to be exact.
Yep.
Dave, thank you. As always, we really appreciate
your
time.
Buddy.
And your insight, and have a great week. Stay cool.
Have a great week, buddy. Bye.
All right, that's Dave Ray, Communications Director, Federation for American Immigration Reform. Folks, there's been a significant power outage on the East Bank of Jefferson Parish. 20,000 Entergy customers without power in Metairie and Kenner. Energy officials are saying that they hope to have the power restored by noon. Today, obviously, the temperatures and the energy draw and consumption right now obviously is taxing this system. It happened the other day in Uptown New Orleans, and now it's happened in Metairie. We'll be right back after the break, folks. Stay with us, 260-1870, or text 260-1870. We'll be right back.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room, to candid interviews with basketball legends, to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.